Hello and welcome to the latest edition, I believe the fifth episode of Pull the Trigger. I'm Trigger with founding members of Trash Rocket. Jin Monster. Welcome. So, have we had any exciting adventures this week? I got to go to work. Aren't you jealous?
Oh, yeah, same here. I forgot. Sorry about that.
Yeah, that was the joy of my week was work. Everything went just to plan. Everything went to plan, everybody. It's just like a normal teacher.
Regular day,
every day.
Uh-huh.
Nothing was thrown off.
Sarcasm.
Beautiful. Now, with that being said, last week I had talked about seeing some local bands and supporting our local bands and supporting those bands that, you know, are in it for the music. And I was on Threads. I love the website. Someone was asking for what they wanted to hear was, like, you know, punk rock bands that were still, you know, legitimate, you know, like angry punk. And someone said, there's this band out of Philadelphia. They're called Soji. They have like 6 songs. They are everything you want in a hardcore band, you know, F the Man, Taking Back the Power, all of it. It rocks. There's women in the band. There's multi-races in the band. It's everything you want. And, oh, by the way, they really kick ass. So,
yeah.
$10 of my money was given to them today to own that album on Bandcamp. I would definitely recommend it. It's Soji Music, I believe, on Bandcamp. Go there. Buy their stuff. Follow them on Instagram. Apparently, they're going on tour near the Philadelphia area very soon. If you're up that way, I suggest going and seeing them. So that was a pretty interesting discovery this week.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I had more musical news in that sense. I know next week I will be giddy because it will be the day after Valentine's Day, which will also be the day after the new Doves record comes out. And if there is a band outside of my ones that I mention all the time that I really go nuts over, it's Doves. Sure. First 2 tracks I've heard sound amazing. It gives me a little bit of a throwback to when they were Sub. They're bringing back the electronics. The second song that they released has a real trip-hop vibe, which, by the way, we are going to do some trip-hop albums later. We will be
on the list
talking about Portishead and Massive Attack.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those records are those bands' bests. I'm not even going to argue with that. I mean, there are going to be some people that are going to say Mezzanine. No, the Blue Tape was just amazing.
It was Mezzanine.
It's a beautiful record. So, this week we are taking it in a different direction than last week. Last week, we looked at the very darker sides of life. From
on the dark side of life. Sorry.
From complete self-destruction to the introspection of loss and becoming old and realizing you're adult,
to a
throwback to music that I feel inspired a lot of other music. And quite frankly, one album I knew I was going to like because I own it, and it was fantastic. And the other one, I've heard a lot of the songs outside of the album because, well, they're staples.
Yes.
But to listen to the record in its entirety, I had another holy shit moment with music today. The Aretha Franklin album we're going to talk about today is absolutely one of the best albums I have ever heard in my entire life. An amazing record. And I truly wish that that style of production would come back into fashion as far as music goes. I especially loved how the background singers complement the songs so well. Background singers should come back into fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They should.
No, yes.
Yeah, they should. I just love...
I'm looking at Hodge.
I love that style. And what I also like...
Yeah, we're working on it.
Okay.
Was... When everyone thinks of Aretha Franklin, we think of the vocals way high up in the mix towards her later years. The vocal range varied on the album, but it always felt like it was where it needed to be to really show off her voice and the way it needed to show off the song. And I'm going to talk a lot about the voice today because both of the singers we're looking at, Nina Simone and Aretha Franklin, definitely have some distinctive voices. I'm going to say that Nina Simone walked so Aretha could run. Very influential on the entire movement of soul, of R&B, of rock and roll. Nina Simone is someone who I found to be quite amazing. I want to say from the age of 7, when my mom would play the records. And we're going to get into my mom's favorite song.
Ooh.
So it was kind of nice to listen to that and, you know, to remember sitting down and listening to that song with her. And she explained why she liked it.
I love that.
And then, you know, I did get to hear the Jacques Brel version, which is the original one. It's good. But Nina, you know, there's occasionally a cover that's the best version.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Nina did it best.
Mm-hmm.
She killed it. So, without further ado, let's get into it. Nina Simone, I Put a Spell on You, 1965. How did I listen to it? I can finally say it. I listened to it on a record.
Woo!
Yay, I've been waiting to have one where I'm like, do I have the vinyl of this?
It was always an 8-track before.
Yeah, so I got it on vinyl. Now, I'm assuming it's not the original mix because it's 1965 and it is in stereo, so I'm assuming it's simulated. But the first track is a Screamin' Jay Hawkins cover, I Put a Spell on You. And it's the title track. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
Hey.
It's a great opener. Nina's voice brings a certain level of snark. Of course I put a spell on you. Leading into that saxophone solo, which sounds absolutely amazing. And what I loved about this song, my notes are pretty short on it, but I felt that it did a great job of introducing who Nina is.
Mm-hmm.
It just gets that vibe going right off the bat. You know right off the bat from the beginning of this record that you're going to listen to something special. I get excited when I listen to this record. I know I'm going to fanboy. I'm not even going to deny it.
This record
is great. Actually, both the records today, they're great.
You know what, Trigger? I was thinking. You do you.
Yeah. At this point, who cares, right? If I'm going to fanboy on it. Maybe,
do it.
You're just doing the records you like. Well, I'm going to do the records I don't like too. But, you know, today I'm going to fanboy because this record is absolutely bloody brilliant. Now, Nina Simone, much like Miles Davis, hated the term jazz. She did not want to be considered a jazz artist.
Mm-hmm.
She hated it. She felt it was constricting. And I can see it on this album because there are moments on it that are for sure jazz, including the instrumental that McCoy Tyner would cover later on a brilliant record of his own. But you hear soul. You hear a bit of rock. You hear some pop in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, interestingly enough, this next track does borrow from a James Bond movie, and I can't remember which one, but Tomorrow Is My Turn is, it has that nice jazz piano with Nina's voice just carrying a perfect bop sound. And then the horns sound like they're in a spy movie, and the reason they sound like they're from a spy movie is because they're from a spy movie.
Whoa.
Wow, right? I love how Nina can just transform her voice seemingly to fit a song. I felt the way she sung the first two songs sound completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing on both tracks. And I'm going to say this over and over and over and over because she sang almost every song on this album differently. I mean, when people talk about great voices, Nina Simone needs to be in that discussion. Not because she used a lot of power all the time, but she uses it very sparingly. But the fact that she could just shift the tone of her voice, the mm-hmm. presence, she could put emotion in the voice. and I love it. A lot of it actually kind of reminds me a little bit, believe it or not, of Cure's Disintegration, how what she's saying doesn't match the tone of how she says it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. That contrast of like complex emotions that I talked about mm-hmm. a lot last week, they're back. And I think maybe that's another reason why I just love this album.
Yeah. It just hurt my heart so much.
But it really adds to the greatness of the record.
It is.
Where do we want to go with that from the first two tracks?
Good call on the, like the Disintegration thing. I didn't even think about that. And then you said that. I was like, oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of those lyrics, and then she's delivering them a certain way.
Yeah.
It'd be like me going, oh, I'm so happy.
I'm so happy.
Not quite so obvious, but yeah.
I'm so happy. Yeah. Every day is great. Fitter.
Trigger is
happier,
great at doing this.
More productive.
Hey, radio. Who's on the list?
Not drinking too much.
No, these are very good. Like, I'm sure, obviously, because it's so big, less like with Aretha and Respect, that I'd heard I Put a Spell on You, but I never really, because I always hear the Screaming Jay Hawkins, if nothing else, because I do a lot of DJing during Halloween, and I will play that.
Yeah.
And then some other unfortunate covers that come later of that song, but.
Yeah, but this one's totally, different.
She did it really well. Yeah.
Yeah. Nina Simone does a great job of making almost every song she does hers.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something to be said for that.
Well, yeah, for sure. I mean, if she did a cover and that's the name of her album,
mm-hmm.
like, that's what the heck?
Right.
Yeah. So, Ne Me Quitte Pas. This song comes from 1959. Mm-hmm. Jacques Brel, he's a Belgian singer, but the song is sung in French.
Yep.
This is my mom's all-time favorite song, and I've heard many different versions of it. This one is my personal favorite version of the song.
Oh, yeah. What was your mom's favorite version? Wasn't this one?
I want to say it might have been Jacques Brel's.
Oh, okay.
I just feel that Jacques Brel, he does a good job of singing it. Don't get me wrong. I feel like Nina does a better job of telling the song's heartbreak.
Because
I believe the song roughly translates to Don't Leave Me.
Yeah, I'm just looking it up now, yeah.
So, what I loved is, this song almost sounds like an opera the way Nina sung it. And I put that in there. Her operatic delivery just makes me feel this song unlike any other version I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
If she makes it feel like the true tragedy that this song is supposed to be. And it's not because of the words she said, it's the way she tells it. The music is that gentle, breezy feel. And it's that really nice contrast from the pain in Nina's voice, who I just feel, I don't know if I've ever heard anybody who, without saying emotions, can make you feel emotions the way Nina could. She can just put it in the inflection just brilliantly. Every album of hers that I've heard, she does it over and over again. I can't think of anyone who did it like she did. She's truly unique in that sense. Again, hearkening back to, I guess, Disintegration, it's that complexity of emotion, hoping that the person doesn't leave. I love this song. I can't, and it, with, last year being what it was kind of like hit me in the feels a little bit today, and I'm still kind of getting emotional about it now.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, it was a great song. It's a great song.
Yes.
Yeah. And what I love about it, Nina doesn't want to keep you in that place too long, and then she goes to the next track. Marriage is for old folks, and I love the contrast and the playfulness. You come out of just heartbreak, yeah, and then it comes into this playful song, you know. It's like, I can't get married. I can't be me if I'm married. I can't go out and have a good time if I'm married. Mm-hmm. Can't do that.
Because that last one was so moving. And then, yeah, I was driving listening to that, and then that comes on. It's like, wait, is this the same person?
Yeah.
I thought my phone had shifted. So. Mm-hmm.
But again, but that's Apple. What's amazing about her.
Yeah, honestly, that's what I was thinking, too, towards that,
The delivery is so different. We're four tracks in, and we've got four different deliveries. That is the brilliance of Nina Simone. I really love that it lightens the mood. The horns and the strings have that playful sound, and Nina just goes with it. She puts that playfulness in her vocals, and she wants to do her thing. She doesn't want to sit at home and watch TV.
Do it, girl.
Yeah, she wants to go out and be free.
Yeah.
You know?
You don't need to be home watching TV.
Yeah, she wants to have fun. And you know what? I identify with that. Mm-hmm. Although, I do want to be in bed by like 9.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
I'm like...
We got an hour and a half.
Yeah, I know.
You are so old.
I'm one of those.
I'm sitting here like...
I'm like, 8 o'clock, I want to be under the blankies, and 9 o'clock, I want to be...
Mm-hmm.
I'm usually late. I got 3 or 4 hours to go.
But, you know, and I pointed out here, she's her fourth different delivery style. And people should really discuss Nina more when we're talking about great voices. It should be. I feel like she should be in that conversation. Who are some of the greatest singers?
I wonder why she's not.
I don't know. And I'm wondering if it's because everyone goes for like, you got to have 17 octave ranges.
Right. Well, and yeah, and that was something else that I noticed, like her range and where it is. And
it really
made me think about things a little differently, you know?
I just feel the passion in her voice is so huge. Even
I
if
think
it's
that's
subtle.
The most important.
Yeah.
I mean...
The song.
That's something that I strive to. I don't strive in any octave range. I strive for that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you want to feel something.
Yeah.
And I feel we've done two records in a row. We finished with Disintegration last week, and we come in with this one. And they're both, while completely different records, sell emotion very similarly.
Very heavy, yeah.
Robert with his 17 ranges and octaves.
Yeah.
No,
he definitely is a wide octave range.
Trent has it too, but he just likes to scream when he gets that way.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Nina. Okay.
And then we're going to move on to July Treat. Now, what I loved about this track is it blends the delivery of the two previous tracks, that somber notes with the playful notes. And in no way, if you told me, hey, guys, we're going to take this song we wrote that was playful, and then we took this sad song, and we're going to kind of mix it together, I'd have been like, you all had lost your damn mind.
Mm-hmm.
We do it all the time.
And
do it all the time.
Yeah.
No. Insane.
Not on the list. Okay.
But.
True.
But she does it, and she does it well.
She does.
Again, the music is a gentle breeze. I loved how everything is... so light, and her words are so dense. And again, the emotional piece I picked up on, I was like, she mentions the term like the April air, and I said, oh man, that's a perfect line for the way this music is being presented, because it does feel like that April breeze. But she's that emotion coming out of her. It's just, she's, you know, obviously, you know, way more playful than Nemeke Tepa, but there's something behind it. And I noticed she doesn't have to belt it out. She controls her voice so well. It's just powerful in her phrasing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like totally fanboying this record on. This
do
record
it.
Is just great.
I'm watching it all.
Love your passion, Trigger.
I could listen to this record. This is one of those, I could listen to it probably twice, three times a day. for months, and I'd be like, yeah, let's listen to it again.
Yeah. Nice.
While still fitting in the 100 times he's going to listen to Closed Down.
Yeah, it's like that. It's just Closed Down by The Cure and this album, and I'm not going to get sick of hearing it. Or sick of hearing either of them. I don't know why words are hard today, folks. Sometimes they are.
They are.
For me, it's every day.
And the next song, I really wasn't sure what it was talking about. Gimme Some.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you.
Go ahead, tell us.
What was she trying to get?
Candy?
Yeah, sure. Like Bow Wow Wow's candy.
I wonder.
Isn't that candy? Never mind.
I just remember learning about the lyrics of that song and then remembering the singer was like 15 when she sung it, and I'm like, ooh.
Mandy.
That's so.
Good old Mandy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Creepy. Creepy. Mm-hmm. Didn't they break up Adam and the Ants? I feel like, didn't someone from Adam and the Ants leave to form Bow Wow Wow?
Oh.
There's a tie to that band, yeah. I don't remember the exact. I've read it somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they are similar in the drum patterns.
It was the drummer. I don't know.
Probably was. And I'm sure someone.
Ding, ding.
Yeah. Someone's going to. Someone, once they hear our new email address, woohoo,
oh, yeah.
What, will probably chime in. It was blah, blah, blah. How could you not know that? You go on there and you all call yourselves experts, and you don't know which member of Adam and the Ants left for Bow Wow Wow.
We can place bets. Who will get back to us first about that? I say maybe John again? J-Gaw.
Johnny.
So, Give Me Some. Which sounds nothing like Adam and the Ants or Bow Wow Wow. I don't know how I got there. Somehow I managed it.
He does.
The lyrics are delivering again a different style.
Yes.
It just keeps, and it keeps working. It keeps working. The trumpets and the guitars play so well off of each other. I love how the song has some jazz basics, but the soul and the early rock and roll influences are very present. The background singers are a nice touch.
Mm-hmm.
This is a fun song about getting some.
It was hard for me hearing her say, you know, for your love, I'd be your slave. Like, that was hard for me to hear. You know. But yeah, it was, I really liked them too. But yeah, I cringed.
Well, she's good with it, so.
Yeah, no, I was like, oh, right, okay, right. Okay, Nina.
She wants.
It's me. It's not you. It's me, for sure. It's me.
She's definitely up for a cheeseburger. That if you. I don't know.
Wait, now I'm really confused. No.
No.
You would be hot.
I'm always painted like this. I got nothing.
Speaking of which, after Give Me Some, you're feeling good. But.
He's going to tell me it means not what I thought.
This song is one of those songs in the American history musical category of one of the world's most famous songs ever. Pretty much everyone associates Nina Simone with Feeling Good. And I can understand it because Feeling Good arguably is what Nina is all about in a nutshell. Mm. Because I love our long notes, but I really can't add anything. And I said that. Mike, it's arguably one of the most famous songs in the history of American music. What can I add here? The song really shows Nina's ability to tell a story, not so much in what she says, but how she says it. Because I love the fact that her voice just sounds like it's in extreme pain. There is a real pain there. But the words, which are iconic, is a new dawn, is a new day, is a new life,
mm-hmm.
and I'm feeling good. Almost like it's ironic, or she's trying to will it into being.
It's like when there's like a singing version of method acting.
Yeah.
Like every song, it's like she's really taking in all right, let's go record it. And she'll step into the booth.
Yeah, the music, it's iconic. What do you want me to say on it? It's an iconic track.
Yes.
I mean, how could I criticize? It's literally one of the most famous songs ever.
Yeah, I was listening to this record with two youngsters
mm-hmm.
in the vicinity, and one of them said, I love this song. And I was
like, ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, dude.
It's amazing. Now, ironically, I have two Verve albums. They did a Verve unmixed and a Verve remixed.
Mm.
And they put all, obviously, the originals on the one track. And then I think Thievery Corporation remixes this one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting take. It's one of the few remixes where I can deal with it. I just remix. Well, I think we discussed this enough in our last podcast. I'm not exactly a big fan of remixes. No. But the unmixed album is definitely a staple in my jazz collection because it's like 14 great tracks.
Mm-hmm.
So this being one of them. But the record, it's still a record. And it's something about holding it in your hands.
Right.
And looking at it. And this is back when they actually cared about what they put in the records. Now everyone's like, oh, you get the artwork. And I'm like, they just throw the record in a sleeve. And there's hardly anything.
Yeah.
I want to say that everyone talks about the artwork of the 60s and 70s and 80s. And I'm going to tell y'all, sorry, we 90s kids had it better than y'all. The CD jackets and booklets.
Oh, for sure. Peak.
We destroy everybody.
Yes. Pearl Jam booklets. Those were.
Vitalogy.
Yeah, okay, so I have the CDs, and then also I have the cassettes, which has the little, amazing.
But I mean, you look at them like the 90s, like, they went from like two pages,
that's
right?
That's all I listened to.
2 pages in the 80s, right? To like this whole book. Like, you get all the words, so, and then the pictures, and mm-hmm. Anton Corbin becomes famous because everyone wants to have him photograph him because, well, he is an amazing photographer.
Mm-hmm.
But you got all of that stuff, and I just remember how many albums that I just sit down. Yeah, like the Pearl Jams, the Stone Temple Pilots. Oxung Baby has one of the best books ever.
Mm-hmm.
And these are just regular editions. But the 60s, they at least still put something in the record besides just a picture on the back.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, no code with, like, printed Polaroids.
Yeah.
And, like, so many different, like, there were so many different ones. You'd only get, like, a certain amount, and it was all...
Yeah, I mean,
And then it all laid out. It was the triangle and the... Oh,
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
Memories. You triggered something.
But we win. Sorry, everyone else. our gen had the best artwork and best books.
So good.
Man, I still get excited when I see a vinyl and it's a double gatefold.
Oh, yeah. You can open it up. Yeah, it's nice.
Mm-hmm. I want to experience that thing I heard about people that grew up in the 70s and got hands on... was it Kiss Alive or Alive 2? Mm-hmm. So you open it up, and it's like you're looking right at the stage as they're playing the whole
thing.
Wow. Was it the pop-up or something?
That was one, too, but I'm talking about it was just an image. So maybe the first Alive, because I think Alive 2, they probably would have done that.
There was a couple of records that have some pop-ups. My dad has a few from one of these bands. I believe it's called If Squared.
Mm.
One of those prog pop bands.
Okay.
I don't know how to describe it. Other than that, I mean, it's pop, but it's weird.
But I mean, like, or just more recently, just in case not on the list. And neither is this band, but getting the Power Slave one.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why I'm like, next year, if it happens to the 40th, somewhere in time.
Mm-hmm. Because
there's a lot to those artworks. But that's, of course, going way off topic. Sorry, Dina.
Well, it's okay.
Where are we? I don't know.
We're at Feeling Good.
Yes.
I was not part of this.
But yeah,
made.
Well, we got there because I said I appreciated the artwork
in
this particular album.
Yeah.
It was back when I feel they still cared about it. A lot of the nostalgia that everyone's selling with the records, I've got to say, I'm a little disappointed with that because I look at it and I remember, like, we were going to the CDs of the 90s where that was the thing. Like, I could sit for hours just listening to the CD, reading the lyrics, and oh, this song was produced by so-and-so, extra guitar player by blah, 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 extra keyboards, sings vocals on this track, featuring yada, yada, yada. You don't get that anymore.
Right.
It's not there. I guess the best thing you can say is, like, Apple's now animating some of the artworks, which was kind of cool, as I was listening to the Magical Mystery Tour, because it's one of my favorite Beatles albums, and the rainbow on the cover is constantly moving, which is, it's cool.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. But, I mean, have you looked at the booklet? I mean, there's some cool artwork in there. I'm going to speculate that the Beatles might have taken some marijuana.
What?
And LSD.
No. Huh?
For the making of the Magical Mystery Tour. Just judging by some of the artwork and some of the costumes.
What kind of rides were they taking?
All right, they weren't always in black suits and ties.
Yeah. It was definitely, it's what I love, though, it's an out there album, but I feel like it's a better pop record than Sgt. Pepper's. Sgt. Pepper's, which I'm going to talk about in this particular album, because I feel like Sgt. Pepper's rips off one of the songs.
Ooh.
So, we're going to get into that as well. So I'm going to make it tie back. And we're going to do it with One September Day. This song was recorded in the 60s, yeah. But it has a 40s throwback. Nina sings as she's floating in on a breeze. Again, another delivery change. Another delivery change. And she does it so flipping well. Oh my gosh. The strings underneath her voice just add to that feeling. It's so much lighter than the last song. I love Feeling Good because it's dun, 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 dun. You know, he's just saying you're feeling good, but everything's about it sort of like, are you? This one definitely has the opposite vibe. Everything just feels nice. And I said it kind of felt like one of those silver tone movies from in the 40s that you'd see the end where, like, you know, the two main characters hug and embrace each other and they fall madly in love at the end of the movie, right? That's what I feel on this particular track. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. And then we get an instrumental break. I guess Nina decided the piano was where she wanted to be on this track versus on the vocals. That works for me. It's a pretty straightforward jazz tune. When you think of jazz, most people, I think, associate it with bop. This was definitely straightforward bop jazz. Drums, piano, string, bass. I guess she's playing the piano and saving her voice for later. I enjoyed it. Obviously, I'm going to talk more about the jazzy stuff when we get into the straightforward instrumental jazz, because I've got some feelings on both those records. Again, I will have to work hard not to fanboy on that day, too.
Do it.
So, we're moving into it. This is the song I'm going to talk about. Beautiful Land. Upon hearing this song, I absolutely am positively sure someone rolled an eye when the Beatles dropped the tune She's Leaving Home.
I'm trying to remember that.
Okay.
One. Yeah, the harpsichord... Yes. It was in there, and the harp, like the blending of the two, it's in there as well, and it definitely has the same. It's a simpler melody than She's Leaving Home, but someone, when we was recording that particular track in the Beatles studio, I can assure
you, it's Paul McCartney.
Heard this song.
He steals everything.
He heard that song and he was like, I like that melody.
He was known for that. I'm sure 100 it was him.
But it was definitely, I got about that. Nina singing about the beauty of the world outside. I love the harp and the vocal. You don't hear harps that much these days anymore.
Right.
I think the harp should come back.
We were talking about that.
Yeah.
What was it? someone not too long ago posted on Instagram Reel where she was playing Schism by Tool on an electric harp.
Whoa.
And it sounded amazing.
Wow.
I was thinking someone needs to get this to Maynard ASAP.
Mm-hmm.
Because you got to remix the track and you got to add this in.
Mm-hmm.
It would add to it.
If it was someone else, never mind. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just imagine him being like, it was someone else's idea. We're not doing it.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, though. I don't know.
Yeah, I kind of get that vibe from him, too. He does seem a little pretentious.
Okay, yeah.
Go ahead and email us with your thoughts, Maynard.
Like, why am I thinking about this?
Yeah. I mean, not a knock on him, but yeah, when I listen to him in his interviews, he does come across as of naturally I would use an odd time signature.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And yet, funny enough, the band's doing it, and he comes in and does the vocals later.
Yeah. And he based it off the fact he was a cross-country runner. I'm like, what the hell does that have to do with 5'8"? 11'8"? I'm like, man, jeez Louise.
He runs in time signatures.
It's in the 3-4, 3-4, 3-4.
One, two.
What if he was like the lead and everyone behind him's like, fuck you, Maynard.
We're running at 6'8" today. Triplets, baby. When I heard that, I was like, that is the most ridiculous shit I've ever heard in my life. And he was talking, who was he talking to? I think it was Sammy Hagar, that interview where he was talking about that.
Oh, my goodness.
And Sammy Hagar, I'm sorry. I get it. He's a fun guy.
Mm-hmm.
But he just strikes me as the Jimmy Buffett of hard rock.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to take him seriously, even though...
Those two are synonymous to me.
Yeah.
I think it's the same.
When he joined Van Halen, he took Van Halen in a much more serious direction, which I find so odd because Sammy Hagar is, if anything, never serious.
I think he tried to follow along on the like party, but he...
Yeah, and he couldn't make it work, which is weird. He is the party guy.
Uh-huh.
And he joins a band who was known for living it up, to say the least. We get Right Here, Right Now, which is, don't get me wrong, a great tune. But when I think of Van Halen, I don't go directly there, even though it's a great tune.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I
would be fine never hearing it again.
Yeah. Diamond Dave definitely is Van Halen. As crazy as he is.
Dude, every time I imagine... You know, you say Van Halen, and I imagine Dave, you know, doing a straddle jump, and his crotch is right there, and I'm just like, jump, baby.
Yeah.
Might as well jump.
You might as well do it.
But you want to know what? The one thing I've always appreciated about Van Halen, and I think someone else had mentioned
Edward Van Halen.
Mentioned it too. Well, it is Edward Van Halen.
Michael Anthony's harmonies.
But it was the fact that what makes Eddie Van Halen a great guitar player was not his technical skill. It was the fact that you never saw him look unhappy when he was playing his guitar.
Hmm.
And I thought about it. I'm like, he's literally smiling in every... He's just having a blast.
Mm-hmm.
Dude is living his dream. And there's something to be said about it, like, when he is just showing that much joy and how much love there is, that does. I think you hear it in his playing too. You can tell he loves it. Because most of Van Halen's music, I would say, it's not very angry. Even the song "Running with the Devil," it's still a playful song.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, and I will say this though, Hodge, you're gonna have to work for years to understand that bass line. Very complex.
And then add Unskinny Bop to that too.
Bomb, 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 bomb.
I think Michael Anthony's bigger contribution was his backing vocals were iconic.
Also, if it was not for that song, we would not have the band Megadeth. Do you know that?
Mm-mm.
Is that what made him want to play?
What happened was...
I would be fine with that. I'm just kidding.
Dave had just gotten kicked out of Metallica. And he was in an apartment, and I guess the two younger guys who were with him eventually joining the band, right?
Like Dave Jr.
Yeah. He said he was just massively hungover, and he wakes up to bump, bump, bump. He's like, do you know how much that song sucks when you're hungover?
Oh, that's how he met...
So they said... First they came...
Ellefson.
Yeah. And they were like, hey, wait a minute. Were you in Metallica? And he was like, yeah. Can you buy some cigarettes?
Yeah.
And then he was like...
I have heard David the door. Say that, yeah.
And then he came back about 15 minutes later. Hey, can you buy us some beer? Now we're talking.
Yeah.
And that, my friends, is how Van Halen formed Megadeth.
Wow.
Which has absolutely nothing to do with Nina Simone. So welcome to the train ride that is my brain. And if you're exhausted listening to it, imagine having to live with it. So.
Okay.
Which does have a beautiful... transition here, because you've got to learn. You've got to learn to deal with my brain, and you got to learn to deal with this album being fantastic. And right. This track right. is, in fact, You've Got to Learn.
Right now.
Jazz and blues, of course, go together like peanut butter and jelly, or as Forrest Gump would say, like peas and carrots. Nina has yet again another style of vocal delivery on this song from all the others. The strings sound crooner, the piano is straight blues, and Nina's voice walks beautifully in between both genres.
Mm-hmm.
Her build and volume as the song moves on has some almost Elvis-like elements, I said. The difference here is Nina sounds so genuine when she builds the volume. I always felt that Elvis was more of the play, full, like, I'm trying to get someone's attention. This just feels more passionate.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess we should get to the last track before I get completely distracted and talk about something completely non-Nina related, because I'm talking about one of the best albums ever. It's Take Care of Business. Musically, this is my favorite track on the album, the musical standpoint of it. The delivery of the vocal reminds the listener of feeling good. Her voice reminds us all of a struggle, yet the lyrics talk about how much she cares for the person, and that person can continue to take care of business for her. And I wonder why she sang it in the way that she sang it. That's something I've spent years trying to figure out, and I still can't figure out why she sung it like she was in pain.
Mm-hmm.
So there's probably something there I'm missing. But it is quite an interesting tune. It's a great closer. I love how we've just done two albums in a row that have, three albums now that have amazing closers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the next one has another. So we're going to do four albums in a row that I think have amazing closers.
Keep track.
So do we want to talk more on that?
The track or the album?
We're on the last one, Take Care of Business.
Talking about the track. Okay, now if we were doing the album.
Talk. Yeah, Take Care of Business, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. Good closer. I can't also figure out why the choice in the vocal delivery, but she's...
Yeah.
It pulled it off.
It's the one... It's the only piece of this album that I really can't figure out is why she sung it like she was singing Feeling Good. But maybe there is a mystery that we're supposed to think about. Maybe she does want us to ponder. Is it because he is there, or maybe he's not there and she wants him to be there? I don't know. Final thoughts on this album. I have Nina Simone, much like Miles Davis, hated the term jazz. She felt it was constricting. This album would confirm her beliefs. She does have jazz tunes on this album. The instrumental track, Blues on Purpose, being very much what a lot of people think of when we talk jazz. However, there are elements of jazz here. Rock and roll, rhythm and blues, Elvis, Chuck Berry, and the girl groups who were big in the 60s. Nina walked in 1959, so a lot of women could run going forward. Not only does this album deserve to be on a top 100 list, which it is here, it should be noted that 88 is way, way, way too low considering the amount of people who were clearly inspired by the genius that this album has to offer.
Mm-hmm.
This was a... Yeah. This is a bloody brilliant album. Yeah.
Wait, what number was it?
88.
88.
Should have been a little higher than that. Because the one we're going to do next is 40. And I even think that one's low. Because when I listened to that, I was like, holy shit. Boy, did a whole bunch of people steal from this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is a fantastic record. Do we want to pause or do we want to keep on going and just tip through it? Are we good to go?
H-O-T-T-O-G-O.
All right.
What she said.
So the next one, Aretha Franklin, Queen of Soul. I Never Loved a Man the Way I Love You, 1967. Notes for listening, reel to reel tape transferred to CD in mono. Got to give a shout out to Tea Time who gave me the copy.
Thanks, Tea Time. And whatnots.
Yeah. Now, it was a great whatnot. You know, he said, he was like, well, if you want a copy of that, I said, well, if you're going to give me one, I'll gladly take it.
Wow.
Sure enough, next week I was there and he had a copy for me. So. I don't know if you've heard of this first tune. This is one of her lesser-known tracks, Respect.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T-P.
Yeah.
Office reference.
Yep. Yeah. Sorry.
But that being said, is there a more famous song to open an album than this? I don't know. I mean, this is a... Yeah, I feel like almost anyone with two ears knows what the song is.
Mm-hmm.
It's an absolute classic. It's full rhythm and blues music. The saxophones, of course, sound amazing. The backing vocals are perfect. Aretha brings her gospel background to the forefront. Because much like Whitney Houston, she left gospel to go into secular singing.
Mm-hmm. I can tell, yeah.
Her voice in the 60s, oh my gosh. Like... When people talk about great voices and they bring up Aretha, yeah, they're right. Oh my gosh, her voice is just fantastic mm-hmm. on this album. Just, yeah, it's perfect. It just, oh, like this album going to give me the feels. Y'all, I'm going to just go ahead and tell you, I had a holy shit moment today. This album, you should own it. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. If you don't own this album, fix that problem. You need to go out and buy it. There isn't a bad tune on it, and the 32 minutes passed way too quickly, and I was sad when it was finished. Absolutely brilliant album. Yeah, this is probably in my top 10 already, and it'll probably quickly be in my top 5. This record was great, and I don't feel like it's genre dependent. I don't care what your favorite genre of music is. This is great music. And I'm going to just mention... I've heard this person, I've heard this person, I've heard this person who clearly borrows from it. Speaking of which, I'm going to go into Drown in My Own Tears. Mm. I don't really feel like we need to really talk that much about Respect at this point. Everyone knows it. Everyone's got an opinion on it. And we all know what opinions are like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The next song, Christina Aguilera has spent an entire career trying to get this style of lyrical delivery. Her entire career has been based on trying to sound exactly like this. And don't get me wrong, Christina Aguilera is probably of today's voices top 5 best there is. And even she can't hit it like Aretha can, which just gives you how good Aretha was. What I loved is how this music floats so nicely between the gospel and the blues. The music is very simple and it's designed to help Aretha move the lyrics. And of course, it's Aretha, so she absolutely moves the lyrics. I love how the background singers are just so present in this mix. You know, you could say that she was a diva, but on the other hand, she did give her background singers a lot of...
For sure.
Yeah, support. And what I said, and it's interesting, this is where I really get into the production stuff, because this album is produced so amazingly well, and I wish more people would look into how this album was made and make songs that way. It just has that beautiful sheen on it. Not like the overly produced sheen. It just has a natural... Phil Spector also got it.
Yes.
Even though he was a little more fuzzy, he had that sheen too. Aretha's voice is not very high in the mix, but it's still very present, which I guess shows the power of her voice. I've never heard this album in mono until now, any of these songs. And much like the Beatles, it's way better in mono.
Mm-hmm.
This song absolutely shines in mono.
Huh.
And I love, love, love how Aretha controls the power of her voice within the lines of the verse. She and Whitney Houston were the absolute masters of this. This is a fantastic tune. As you can see, I had a lot to say about this.
He does. Yeah.
Just going on, and it just, like every song, I'm like, holy shit, this is a great track. Holy shit. This
right on. Yeah.
I just kept going. I'm like, man, well, it's another great song. It's yeah. another great song.
She does it so effortlessly.
Yeah. Like, it was no issue. It was just like, I'm going to go loud, soft, loud, soft. And it didn't change the melody. It doesn't throw anyone off.
Mm-hmm.
There's only two that I've heard that do it to this level. It was her and Whitney Houston, who I'm going to go on record as saying are, I think, the two best singers to ever stand behind a microphone. Because, yeah, again, it goes to that. It's not necessarily the octave range, which, of course, Aretha had a gazillion octave range. So did Whitney. But how you deliver it is also equally important, you know, versus can you go from alto to contra alto to soprano?
Right.
You know?
And even pitch,
yeah.
honestly. Like, even pitch. Like, they both have amazing
yeah.
pitch. But there were some parts where like emotion was mm-hmm. definitely more important.
Because when you think about it, I feel the song by Whitney Houston where she covers Dolly Parton's "I Will Always Love You."
Yeah.
The emotion that she sings that chorus in
mm-hmm.
when that song drops and all of a sudden her voice and you know I'm not even going to try because I ain't got it.
Oh.
Man, that hits.
Yeah.
That's an emotional feel. And I get that all throughout this album. It just hits. I mean, this album, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm like having a David Bowie Ziggy Stardust moment. The first time hearing U2's Octoon Baby moment today, I was just like, holy shit, this album is good. I was loving it. This was musically a great day to sit down and listen to both of these records back to back.
Oh, absolutely.
I could do this a lot more.
Yeah, this was a really
oh, man.
Good day.
Yeah.
Like, it really was.
Do we want to say anything more about Drown in My Own Tears? Definitely sounds like a Cure title of a song.
It does, actually. Similar to The Drowning Man.
Yeah, our new song, off our new album, Drown in My Own Tears.
No, I thought you were saying like both of them... Was it like a real more, a lot of body, a lot of richness to their the tone of their voices? I like that. I've also said, I don't know if I've said it on here before. I know I've said it to you about in rock veins. That's what I also think about Ann Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot, even when they go higher, they it doesn't get shrill on any yeah. of them. Yes, the other two are in a different world than Ann yep. Wilson, but yeah, you know what I mean.
But yeah, I just feel delivery. Sometimes it's just so important, and I feel like both of these albums that we listened to today were a masterclass mm-hmm. in vocal delivery.
Did Whitney make this list? Maybe we don't get to talk.
No, that's what's wild to me. I feel like The Bodyguard, that was a big cultural moment.
Soundtrack could have been, yeah. Okay.
So let's go to the title track. I Never Loved a Man the Way I Love You. Straight up a blues song. This is straight blues. And sometimes, you know, I feel like people really cheese up on blues these days. And I hear a blues song now from most of the modern, and I'm like, ugh, another one. Because I don't feel like it has the authenticity of a lot of the older blues songs. When I hear Muddy Waters, you know, Buddy Guy, even some of earlier works of B.B. King, you feel some emotions. Mm-hmm. Does it make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Aretha owns this song. The sound of the horns, the sound of the background singers, the hazy vocal production on this one. This one I noticed definitely had, they almost like lowered her fidelity. Mm-hmm. And it works. It gives it that 60s Ronettes sound.
Ronettes, yes. On it, yeah. Okay, good call.
Is it this song, or it's one of the songs, either this song or the one coming up, where like she lets her voice break. She makes her voice break a lot, and it just made her feel so vulnerable, mm-hmm. as opposed mm-hmm. to like her belting and everything. And I was just yep. like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, I didn't mark that down anywhere. Should have. I think I was just more like, I was probably so much like blown away. I was trying to focus on like, okay, I've got to.
Also, you have a lot of things that you can. I'm just like vocals and lyrics, duh. Well, like you have this like whole.
No, it's nice when.
Like, yeah. world in this song, too, you know. So there's so much, but I'm just like,
yeah, I'm just,
that's what I'm focused
yeah,
on.
Yeah, to me, I'm just, today I was right. like, I'm like, oh just my like, God.
Going
yeah,
with
yeah,
the
yeah.
feeling. It's yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. It's okay to let it go sometimes. It's nice to show the, as you put, vulnerability.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Same with sometimes when like, you're playing sure, instruments, mistakes work sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm sure they, you know, she meant to do those.
Things. Yeah, right, right.
Yeah.
Because she obviously could have gone back.
Like, yeah. just, it was just so, like, sweet, and I don't know, I enjoyed it.
And what I said was they just don't make music this way anymore. Because mm-hmm. I said it's a shame, because this could go on soul records, on pop records, on rock records, and it would all work. And I said, wow, I love this track in mono. I just keep, I love this song. This song is great. Next track. This one's great too. And the next track after that, this is great. I just feel like I could have had one line. This whole album is great, though, and you should buy it. But if I haven't mentioned enough, if you don't own this record, buy it. Absolutely. Buy it.
And do mono? It.
Yeah, I'm going to try to find a mono copy of it.
There's that bird again.
Soul Serenade. The opener reminds me a little of Nina Simone in the delivery of the vocal. However, once the opener finishes, it's a blues song in Aretha style, which walks so nicely between gospel and blues. This tune is so just perfect when Aretha sings it, mm-hmm. because the trumpets play off of her vocals, which yeah. it's another great track.
Mm-hmm.
And I just keep finding, like, this plays well with her vocal, that plays well with her vocal. I feel, again, when we talked about it last week, when I said The Cure, everything was done with intention. Everything here, again, is the intention. This is a masterclass. I mean, I don't know what else to tell you. This album is absolutely bloody brilliant. Do we want to say anything else on Soul Serenade?
Another good one.
Yeah. I mean, that's just where
it truly is a good one. Yeah.
I mean, I'm just like, and the next trick, which
I would like to find this in mono too.
Yeah. I mean, oh, yeah. The mono version is just amazing. Don't Let Me Lose This Dream. I enjoyed this track because it sounded so different from everything else on the album. I don't know if you all heard it. I definitely was thrown back to Stan Getz a bit with the Brazilian guitar.
Okay.
I definitely sort of, not quite, you know, full on from Ipanema, but you know. But it was there.
Right.
Right. I would have never have thought to put Aretha's voice on this type of music. I would have never have said, hey, you know what? I think we need to try Brazilian jazz for your vocal.
Mm-hmm.
Someone thought they should, and I'm glad they did. because, and I said, of course she pulls it off. She's Aretha freaking Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the background singers come in midway through, and they and Aretha just take this song to a whole new level. I think I'm having a holy shit moment. This album is so fucking good, is what I wrote. I am totally geeking out. Even in my notes, it's just like full geek out. I'm like,
I love that.
Oh my God, yeah. I'm like, oh man, well, this has got to be a letdown track, right? Nope. Does not let you down any point. This album just keeps just going.
Keeps rolling.
And baby. No, we're not going to do that. The track is baby, but it is not that version, thank goodness. I had to do that one. Oh, man, because, see,
He didn't make the list.
I had to live through that moment. I came into teaching right as that song was hot shit.
What was that, Biebs?
Yeah, and, oh, my gosh, all the kids, baby, man, I'm like, I'm like, if someone sings that song again, I don't know.
It's gotta be so strange teaching youngsters through these years.
And now, like, it's those kids are now older than some of the coworkers I now work with. Oh my goodness. And then I found out the other day, and I didn't even realize it, that one of the Paris who's been working in our building now for 2 years, I taught her history. And she was like,
"Wow,
you were in my, I was in your class."
Mm-hmm.
Huh? what class? And she was like, "You don't remember me?" I've had a gazillion students. I apologize. And chances are, if I don't remember you, don't take it personally, but that's probably a good thing. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, if I remember students, it's either because they did something I'll never forget.
They bad.
Or they bad. But this baby, I immediately go to Robert Plant. I was like, does he have to pay a fortune in royalties for his use of that? Baby. How many times does he say that? I'm convinced that, you know, Robert Smith has the word nothing. Robert Plant has baby. How many, did he not say it on an album? I don't think so. That was his catch.
That was.
I'm not a Robert Plant fan.
Oh, man. My thing is with Robert Plant, though, and you got to give him credit. Dude is 117 years old, and his voice still sounds exactly the same as it did in Zep.
No way.
It's amazing. He did...
That's AI generated.
He did something...
I'm not going to give him anything.
He was at some pub somewhere, and I guess someone was singing a song that he knew, and he was having a brewski, and he busted out... And I'm like, how?
So he sung, like, he was able to sing healthily, like, that whole time.
He was just...
That is interesting. Yeah.
Considering, I mean, you know, heavy smoker, all that stuff. And he still has that high register.
That's crazy.
And then the Alison Krauss album, he...
I love those.
I think he made a deal with the devil.
Yeah, I mean, that
was... Raising Sam. Love that.
But yeah, but he still had... But even there, I'm like, how, dude? How?
Did you say Alison Krauss?
Mm-hmm. I think so, yeah.
Oh, okay.
They have an album, Raising Sam. It won the Grammy that year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a different style.
Well, I like her.
He went into a different style. And I didn't realize, he said Allison and the other guy that's working with him, the producer that plays most of it, Jackknife something.
Jackknife Lee.
Yeah, thank you. That was like his first real foray into doing harmonies. And I went back to Zep and I was like, oh yeah, I guess he never did that.
Well, yeah, no one was really singing with him.
Well, I know, but I'm just not even in the studio. Like, oh wow, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Allison taught him a lot of that.
And I want to say, if it was harmony, it was probably just someone taking the tape, making a copy of the tape, maybe playing it a little slower, maybe playing it a little faster to get that three, you know, octave sound. The production, though, on this song and her voice, it's the right guitar, it's the background singers. Damn, this song makes you feel like reminiscing pain and joy that are both in the song. Again, somewhat in a sense of Nina Simone, where there was what she says, what you think about, what you feel, and all three are different emotions. I'm geeking out. I just went like full music brain with this. Like I was thinking of all the songs that I was trying to have listened to in my time where I'm like, yep, that's definitely influenced by this. That's influenced by this. Mm-hmm. And it quickly got beyond. I was like, I need to stop and focus because I'm listening to a killer record. Don't worry about what it's influencing. Worry about what you're hearing. And I guess here is Dr. Feelgood. Love is serious business.
It's gonna make you all right. That yeah. song?
No.
Thank that was a cover.
Thank goodness. Oh my gosh. Speaking of that, have you all heard Vince Neil recently? Oh dear God.
No, thank you.
I mean, he sounds like someone had his cat skinned alive.
I'm gonna flush that man right
now. I'm more amazed at like Nikki Six can not actually be playing the bass and it's still playing. He's that good.
And yeah, he is pretty good. I found that interesting too, that, you know,
doesn't even try to hide it.
My thing is I'm wondering, could he ever really play the bass? Because now that we're coming out and they're showing all of these taped shows from even back in the day where he's clearly not playing.
Really?
Yeah.
He was the main writer, but that's not the same thing as playing it.
Yeah. So,
because he was maybe drunk all the time? Was it drugs?
Well, more than just being drunk.
Yeah.
It was a different one.
Like yeah. He had a, like, they show recently a fan coming on stage and he raises his hands to help push him away with the security guy and the song's still going full bass and everything. It's
like, I'm like, dude, you are some kind of a good player, man. You're not even hitting anything.
Wow.
Steve I wants to know what you're
doing.
Can
we look into that, Hodge?
I almost want to think, did Mick Mars...
What?
did Mick Mars take double minute. Duty?
JK, bro.
So yeah,
I know we're getting a new drummer, but I'm just kidding, Mike.
So this song straddles again gospel blues. The piano and the horns just hit that right spot. Aretha's vocal on this particular track is scratching an itch I didn't even know I had.
Amazing.
This might have been the song you were thinking about.
Maybe.
She has a fever and the only cure is love. Wow, the piano is hitting so hard and the outro of Aretha just singing. It's got to be this song.
Mm-hmm.
And that saxophone, only adjective I had, delicious.
Delicious, okay.
Delicioso.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. What else do you want me to say, guys?
It's for all the senses.
Like, I don't feel like I'm hitting... I mean, for anyone who's heard it, they all know. Anyone who hadn't heard it, you should hear it. It's... Yeah. Anything we want to add, or...
I just want to say that love is a serious business.
Yep. Good times. This song is definitely of the era.
Let the good times roll.
And it is that Motown sound that I said I really, really enjoy. That song. This one's that song. The guitar walking and talking with Aretha's vocal. Staying somewhere that makes you feel good until you can deal with the pain and hurt that subsides within you, as the pain and hurt subsides within your soul. This song is again another masterclass in production. Everything is perfect. Wow, such a great tune. I just keep going. It was like, oh my, great, great. This is great. This is great.
Wait. Nope, it's great.
Yeah. This is a masterclass, folks.
This was, what, 68?
What? I thought it was 40. Thought it was 40 on the...
Oh, no, I mean
the year.
1968.
Oh, 67.
67? Okay, yep. Yeah, 67.
Oh, I thought you 40. Meant on the list.
No, I'm sorry. And then Simone was...
65.
65, okay.
So relatively close same together. Era, yeah. Do right woman, do right man. Low key, this has always been my favorite track of Aretha Franklin.
Mm.
You know, I'd heard this one several times, I think on some sort of compilation. Hearing it in mono does not change that. The music is in the background, that vocal's up front. and says that if a woman is to do right, a man also has to do right. And because it is a man's world, she says she does deserve love, but more, most importantly, she deserves respect in that situation.
Mm-hmm. She's flesh and blood. I really liked this one.
Mm-hmm. I have a feeling a lot of people could relate to what she was saying here.
Yeah, I was like, this is quite feminist.
Mm-hmm.
For, you know, especially, what, 68?
Well, that's, yeah, here, you know, the last note.
I wasn't alive at that time.
Yeah, the last note written was, I love how so many of these themes of this album can absolutely apply 60 years later.
Yeah.
That was, yeah. So, I'm glad I'm not the only person seeing. I was like, these themes totally apply.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They do.
They shouldn't, but they
true.
Do.
Oh, good way to look at
come
that.
On. Yeah. Let's move forward, people.
No.
So, any more on this song, or... I mean, because I've got, like, what, two more tracks to geek out on real quick.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, geek out. Don't let us stop you.
I feel like we should have a little sound clip, like, Triggered Fans Boys Out. Yeah.
Remember that, okay.
Clearly, he's an Aretha fan.
Try to harmonize it. Right? Yeah.
Triggered Fan Boys Out.
Okay.
All right. Speaking of someone saving me, this track's called Save Me. This is the rock and roll somebody track on the album.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's a killer. Aretha just absolutely owning this song on the vocal. The first thing that came to my mind when I'm listening to this track, if she had wanted to, she could have absolutely fronted a rock and roll band, and she would have absolutely killed that stuff. Absolutely would have been one of the most legendary rock bands to have ever walked the face of the earth. And I then remarked, if you disagree, then you haven't heard this song. She is absolutely flexing her vocal range on this track. Damn, this is another killer tune. So mm-hmm. Ended that one. I'm like, yep, great, 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 great.
And?
Trigger. Oh.
No. Trigger. Sorry, I was looking at the cover and seeing how beautiful she was.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's true.
I mean, is, but, you know, this cover.
And then, of course, the last...
I wasn't on top of it.
No, it's okay.
The last track, of course, is a Sam Cooke cover. When we talk about songs that are covers, and, you know, you always think, well, that's a good cover, but you never go... Well, you know, you don't often go, well, that song's that person's now.
Right.
You've got, like, right. Jeff Buckley comes to mind with Hallelujah. It's his song now.
Johnny and Hurt.
Johnny and Hurt. Sam... You're great, but I bet Sam even had to agree on this. That's Aretha's tune now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I Will Always Love You.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Dolly said that's her song. That's Whitney's song.
Yep.
Which it was nice.
Well, I heard Dolly's version of it. Too. And
it's sweet.
It's sweet, but mm-hmm. It doesn't have that emotional impact.
Like, it feels thin compared to Whitney's,
absolutely sent that song to the stratosphere.
Yep.
Aretha does that here. She owns this song. The music is so emotional. Aretha's vocal power here, it just hits you with all the feels, how she dips between singing and just belting it so casually.
Mm-hmm.
It's captivating. What a killer closer to an album. If this track was an instrumental, you wouldn't think much of it. That's how good Aretha's vocal is on this track.
Mm-hmm.
This is, man, buy this record. I know I've said it a billion times. Buy the record. Buy the record. And if you can't get it, go to a record shop and have them ordered for you.
Trigger Fanboys Out.
That did feel so cool. Right.
Do we want to add more to that song, or do we want to move to final thoughts?
I took nonverbal cues on that time. I was like, I'm catching it.
Do we have anything we want to add to that song?
No. Aretha's real pretty.
The fanboy that you are, you keep saying everything. Yeah. Except for maybe stuff like that.
Yeah.
You just fanboy.
Yeah. And final thoughts. You know an album is freaking good when the single Respect, which is an iconic song in the all-time history of American music, might actually be the worst tune on the album.
Mm-hmm.
If you're rating that song out of a 10, it's a 9.9. This is an album you should own. I don't care what style of music you call your favorite. I'm having a holy shit moment right now.
Yes.
I've heard several of these tunes previously, but I never sat down and actually given this album a listen, and wow, I'm glad I did. This album is an absolute classic. It comes in at 40 on the list, and for Apple, I'm going to say that's low as well.
This album
was absolutely phenomenal. I absolutely love this album. There were so many different styles of music that I could tell take influence from it, if not necessarily the music, the production style, the vocal delivery, the way how everything just plays together so beautifully, how they varied where Aretha's voice was in the mix, how she just controls her voice.
Mm-hmm.
Is amazing, because when everyone imitates Aretha, they do her always belting out, and this album just shows how well she controls that particular part of her emotions in that. Like I said, I was blown away. Any other thoughts we should add to that album?
It was, I think it's the first time, not counting, like, say, hits collections, I've listened to an album of hers from front to back. That's not a knock, just, you know, with so many artists out there.
That's great for all of these albums.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Respect, of course, since a little kid. I remember the first time I was actively liking a song of hers when it was new, including somebody else who's on the list.
George Michael.
How did you know? The 80s song, Knew You Were Waiting For Me. Yeah. Another great guy in that kind of genres.
And two great singers. I said another great track.
Yeah, and that's just when it was more like, oh, okay, and then going back and listening to other stuff again, other than just Respect, but yeah, this album, I could see what you say, like, that ain't necessarily the best track on there.
No,
that's a compliment, though, too.
Yeah, that's a compliment.
It's neat.
Yeah.
Sure.
It is so interesting. You're like, it's a 9.9, and it's probably the worst tune on the album.
Mm-hmm. I wish every album could be like that, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it did. I was like, it's pretty bad when you're like, this might be the worst song on this album, and that's a classic.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess we should have some final thoughts. I actually wrote down final thoughts this time. I'm going to sound professional for a change.
Trigger fanboys out. Okay.
So. Unfanboys out.
For some reason, I thought we were going to do like a impromptu, like professional.
Yeah.
Trigger professionalisms out.
Trigger professionalisms
out. I don't know.
So, this was a hell
of a musical moment.
We'll do that too.
But this was a hell of a mix of albums today. And I'm sort of glad we all agreed to go in this genre. I thought I was doing it to save time, and Lord knows I was doing it to have my mind blown.
True.
One of these albums is already a big time favorite of mine. That was Nina Simone. I loved that album. I've loved that album since I was a very young kid. And a new album for me to consider in my all-time greats, because this hit. It is a reminder for everyone to understand that Black history is a part of all of our history. There's some real passion in these albums.
Mm-hmm.
Listening to these albums remind me of why I'm a fan of music in general. Genres be damned, good music is good music. Today's show clearly presented in my mind two of the best albums laid to tape. And I don't feel like age matters here. If you love music, you should love these albums. Lastly, Aretha in Mono is amazing. That's our show for the week. questions and comments, hit us up on our new email.
What's the email?
New email.
TrigandTrashRocket@gmail.com.
TNT.
We want to know what you think. That being said, for Hodge, Monster, I'm Trig, and I'll see you, and they'll see you next time.
Later. Why is everybody staring at me?
Oh.